program, CBS. This is Penn Radio, gmail.com is where you want to send to, penradio.com. That's Penn with two N's. And if you want to call in, 866-570-PEN, 7366. And my guest today, filling in for Michael Godeau, who's down in Florida seeing a space launch, and who called us yesterday and said he'd set up an ISDN because he could do it and talk about flying fish jumping out of the water. And he was very excited about that. We decided not to put him on the air. Instead, we have Lawrence O'Donnell, Jr., executive producer of The West Wing, and say some other credits that you have.
Just, you know, if I had anything to do with that decision yesterday, I would have put Godeau on this morning with whatever he could get you from Cape Canaveral.
Yeah, well, I say, well, it's not for Cape Canaveral. There aren't sailfish jumping in the air in Cape Canaveral. This is on the coast. He's moved. He's on a boat now. But no, we were gonna do it. But I think the thing was that Happy Jack just didn't want to bother setting up the ISDN. There was no sense that he would be, you know, less good than you. There was just the sense that it was too hard to set up the ISDN.
Gotcha.
You are less trouble. You're sitting here in front of the microphone the whole thing. So that's the way it goes. We're gonna talk very, very advanced chess master politics today. You're from California, and now that
I'm from Boston.
Yes, you are.
I live in California.
But how do
I've
you talk?
I've gone
now?
Hollywood.
Yes, you sure do. Listen to that.
I'm a registered voter in California.
Listen to the way you talk. You talk like a Californian.
No, this is my radio voice.
You want to do a little bit of it in Boston? You want to do your real accent?
If I did, like, the whole show in my Dorchester accent, like, where I'm from,
yeah.
You know, the audience, like most of America, would have no idea what I was saying.
Exactly.
Especially if we started talking about cars. I mean, you know, then, you know, we just lose everybody.
But
I actually had to learn to speak American.
And you learned by listening to the radio, right?
I did. Like many
of our new immigrants.
Yeah. No, I was driving cross country right after high school, between high school and college. I get to New Jersey, which is the farthest west I've been in my life. And I've got to fill up the car with gas. And I pull into this gas station, and there's this guy, the gas station guy there, because it was a real old-style gas station. You couldn't pump your own gas. He sounded like Merle Haggard to me. He sounded like somebody, you know, from, I don't know, Arkansas, some kind of place.
This is New Jersey.
And it's New Jersey, yeah. Right. And I didn't quite get what he was talking about. He had no idea what I was talking about, what the guy from Dorchester was talking about in terms of, like, you know, getting gas in his car. But we pulled that off, and I get back in the car, and I goes to myself, and, you know, this is very hard to do without profanity. Okay, this accent, I'm just saying, I actually have never heard this accent without profanity. So anyway, I get back in the car, and I turn on, you know, like CBS news radio, and I just said to myself, I have to learn to speak American. And it was really like I was in, you know, the language lab in high school, you know, with the French tapes going, listening to these guys just report the news and paying attention to what they were doing with the I's and the O's. The O is the part, when people do the Boston accent, they're always just doing the I's, you know, like pack your car and have it yet, which is an accurate version of it. But the subtleties are in a bunch of other letters, including the O's, like Joanna. Joanna, come here. If your mother sees you in those hot pants, are you out of your, you know, I'm stopping the profanity. There's a rhythm to the profanity here.
I've heard you do this.
Oh, boy, this
I've
is
heard
hard.
You do the Donna and the miniskirt thing a zillion times.
It's a,
and
yeah.
The punchline of that is an obscenity that is so far beyond
right.
What they call the F-bomb.
And by the way, there's an adjectival ramp into the obscenity, which is the word wicked. And so I am taking out the word wicked, and I know a lot of people in the audience who know, you know, Boston speak are going, hey, he's not saying like wicked. And it's like, well, yeah, because if you say wicked, there's a couple of words that follow that, like,
sure.
every time.
And
so I'm holding back on the wickeds.
So you're gonna talk like an American for us today?
We may go back and forth. You know, one time when the one public panic I've had over this accent was I was substitute hosting Hardball for Chris Matthews on MSNBC. It was, you know, about the fifth or sixth time I was doing it. And, you know, there's a little billboard of that show that you read off a prompt. You're saying, you know, today we're going to have Penn Jillette, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. You know, and not only am I trying to, when you substitute for somebody, you kind of feel that monkey on your back. So I'm trying to do it. in Chris Matthews' energy, right, and high speed and all that thing. And so I do a read of the prompter. And the last line of the prompter copy on that show is, let's play hardball. Okay? So I do my read of the prompter in Perfect American. I get down on the bottom line of the prompter copy, and I go, let's play hardball. Now, wait. This is the rehearsal. We're going on the air in 30 seconds. I don't have time to read that billboard again, which I would like to do, to prove to myself that I can still say the word hardball with an American accent, okay? So the last version of that in my ear is me cracking and saying hardball. So now we go live, and I'm reading the prompter copy, and I'm just in this desperate fear, you know, which, as you know, makes it worse.
Yeah,
if you're going to sit there and concentrate on stage or in a performance thing, I hope I don't do this. guess what you're going to do, right? So I don't even know. I'm billboarding Henry Kissinger, whoever these people are, and it's my mind's just a blank, and I'm trying to just get down to that word, and it's here's what I was thinking of the whole time I was reading the billboard live was, okay, what's my ad lib if I say hardball? What's my joke?
And the whole country in unison goes, get your ass back to Dorchester now, and it's called Dorchester.
Right.
Get back there.
So my panic became twofold. One, that I would say hardball. And then two, that I wouldn't have a really good ad lib joke, you know, to follow up that slip and kind of explain it to America. But broadcasting professional that I am, I said hardball.
There you
go. And the show went on.
And the show went on. And Western civilization, as we know it, continues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find that when I'm doing the show, I'll have a change. I've been thinking about, like, the night before, like, I want to put in a whole new section and just changing some wording, like 3 or 4 sentences. And I get close to it in the show that I've been thinking about. And in my mind, I say, I goes to myself, I go. I said, I go, well, you know, I haven't really worked this out. So I'm going to try that tomorrow night after I've done enough. And by the time in the middle of that thought, I'm into the whole new section. I've catapulted a whole new thing. Once you decide that kind of thing, you go into it. And speaking of people saying things off the cuff, your governor.
Who is also an accented person.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. But not as stupid an accent as Dorchester.
No, Dorchester is... I love it. I'm from there. I love everybody there.
We're not broadcasting.
Okay, great. Then I'll tell you the truth. It's the ugliest accent in the English language, okay? And there's nothing worse. There's nothing more poisonous. And here's my little Boston accent story, kind of proving its effect on the uninitiated. I was in France one time with this French aristocrat who had gone to Harvard Business School, and so he knew the Boston accent. And we're walking through his vast wheat field with another French aristocrat who's never been to Boston. We start talking about the Boston accent, and I am, of course, immediately asked to perform it, which I do. And when I finish my performance of the Boston accent, the French aristocrat, who's never heard it before, says, do the girls talk that way too? Which was the perfect question, because this was the ugliest accent that he'd ever heard, and he couldn't imagine any involvement with a girl who talked like. And of course, the sad answer is yes, they do.
Yeah. Well, I was in Boston after you told me that story. We were doing a show there.
Don't reveal that these are all old stories.
Okay.
let's make it feel like, you know, he's this stuff off the top of his head. It's gray. You know,
not the standard shtick. Okay. When I heard a story similar to that. And, you know, I was at a gym on a runner. Because, you know, to keep a body like this, you have to work out.
Yeah.
And I was on a runner, and next to me was this very attractive woman in workout clothes. And she started a conversation with me. And her accent was so much heavier than you at your jokiest.
Right.
And had the word wicked and profanity really every third word. Like more than I ever heard in the carnival, you know, more than I ever heard anywhere. And I think she was kind of flirting with me. But it was so hard to tell.
Impossible to tell by tone.
Yeah,
there are absolutely no tone signals in the Boston accent other than I hate you.
Yeah.
That's the tone you... It's an accent like a clenched fist. That's the feeling you're getting from it the entire time you're exposed to it. And so, you know, it's why cinema, for example, has never gone to the very passionate love scene in the Boston accent.
Right. You know? Well, she then said, I said, I'm very taken by your accent, I said to her. And she said, well, I lived in California for a while and lost a lot of it.
Yeah, they think that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no one in my family thinks they have an accent. No one. You say to them, okay, say car. Mm-hmm. Car. They believe they've said exactly what you just said.
Yeah, exactly. And she thought that because she said totally at one point,
right,
that her whole accent was completely gone. But it didn't go. I mean, I
she said totally instead of wicked, by the way.
Once. Yeah. Once. The other five times were wicked. But Arnold Schwarzenegger, with his accent, said the thing about, let me see, I'm going to read the quote here. This is in a tape, 6-minute tape from his office.
Yeah, he's doing a Nixon thing in his office where he's crazily running tapes of meetings. And by the way,
well, how bad could that go?
You know,
that's never gone badly.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Isn't it good to have a taped record of everything we said?
Sure. You want to have that? Sure.
Well, here's what his crazy theory was. He wants the speechwriters to get the way he talks. It's like, no, Arnold, no, that's exactly what you don't want them to get. You want them to write English the way a governor talks, and you read that. Don't have them learn the way you speak and start writing that, or it's all over. But that really was his theory of why he was taping these conversations.
I mean, Cuban, Puerto Rican, they are all very hot. They have the, you know, part of the black blood in them and part of the Latino blood in them that together makes it. That's
our governor on tape.
And then he said, after the recordings came out, the comments made me cringe when he read them in the Friday Los Angeles Times. Anyone out there that feels offended by those comments, I just want to say I'm sorry. I apologize. If I heard my children make similar comments, I would be upset. And then Garcia, who he was saying it about, said there was no problem. She calls herself a
hot blooded. Can I just read the exact wording of the sentence about his kids?
Yeah.
The fact is that if I would hear this kind of comments in my house by my kids, I would be upset. And today, when I read it in the papers, it's something when you say things, but it is another thing when you read it in the paper. It made me cringe.
They cleaned it up a lot.
Yeah, they
this
did.
Website
yeah.
that
yeah.
I have. Yeah, yeah. An awful lot. Yeah.
No, the great thing about Arnold is if you do transcribe him word for word, you're never going to get an agreement between the subject and the verb in the sentence. It's really fun. It's all you have to do to write an Arnold imitation is to just get grammar wrong.
Now, but the other side put out these remarks.
Yeah, what happened, the way we discovered this, it turns out, the LA Times ran it as a scoop. Hey, we've got this tape of The Office. And then the question became, where did they get the tape? And it turns out they got the tape from Phil Angelides' campaign. That's the Democrat running for governor against Schwarzenegger in California. And so now the problem in California is which campaign has been hurt by this most. The Schwarzenegger campaign for his stuff about black blood, his chemistry lesson about black blood mixing with Latino blood, or the Phil Angelides campaign for the so-called dirty trick of revealing these tapes, which they say they found on the governor's website in a not in a password protected area. The governor is saying no, that wasn't a password protected area. So in political terms, you have this controversy about did the Angelides campaign do something dirty in getting the dirt on the Schwarzenegger campaign.
866-570-PEN. That's 7366. 866-570-7366. 866-570-PEN. Or PEN Radio. That's with two N's. PENradio@gmail.com. PENradio.com. And we're talking about this thing. And that's the thing about, you know, you spent a large amount of your life in politics.
Yeah.
You were very involved in all sorts of stuff. And you were involved in the Clinton White House and all of that.
I worked in the Senate, the Democratic side, for 7 years while Clinton was in the White House. So I had a lot of Oval Office meetings with Clinton, cabinet meetings with Clinton, cabinet meeting rooms with, on legislation he was trying to pass through the committee I was working on.
And those things were all taped?
They better not be. they better not be. But, you know, it's funny that when I read the transcript of this Schwarzenegger meeting, it was the single stupidest governing meeting I have ever read, I've ever been exposed to. I mean, you know, our meetings were unbelievably sophisticated and smart compared to these people. And by the way, here's the, one of the curious presences in this meeting. In the meeting, Schwarzenegger's saying all this stuff about basically about, it was about Bonnie Garcia, who is a Republican assemblywoman in California. He was specifically talking about her, and this is why he liked her, is that mix.
Now, but is he talking about hot in the sense of passionate, or is he talking about hot in the sense of sexual?
Like, well, that was in...
I don't even know what Bonnie Garcia looks like. Does that answer our question if we see her?
Not necessarily for Schwarzenegger, you know, because who knows what his tastes are. Uh-huh. But he... you know, the press took it as ambiguous, and they kind of generally landed on the side of it being about temperament. It reads from him as much about sex as temperament, and possibly more so. But here's the interesting presence in the room. His chief of staff, Arnold Schwarzenegger's chief of staff, is someone named Susan Kennedy, mm-hmm. who is both a Democrat and a lesbian. And, oh, by the way, just for the hell of it, a married lesbian. Okay? Uh-huh. Now, she's sitting there listening to all this stuff and just, you know, kind of nodding and saying, yeah, I really, she's talking about how much she really loves Bonnie Garcia, which I guess also has some ambiguity.
Yeah.
In it. But it's just, you know, she's one of the shocking appointments to the Schwarzenegger administration when he went very, very low in the polls, down, you know, to Bush levels in the 30s. His way out was basically to try to change parties without changing parties, mm-hmm. by bringing in the ultra-liberal Democrat, who's sitting there during this very politically incorrect conversation about women.
Is it really very politically incorrect?
Politically incorrect. I'm not saying it's necessarily incorrect. I mean, I think his chemistry is incorrect.
But, I mean, those words, hot, and that black and Latinos could be hot in either sense, that's the kind of thing that once you're out of politics, almost anyone can say, right?
I guess, but you know what?
Can Leno say that?
Oh, sure. When you're in show business, you can say anything, yeah. Absolutely. And you can be taped saying anything, and, mm-hmm. and there's absolutely no damage to it, which is why, you know, Bill Clinton belonged in show business, because mm-hmm. his inclinations were all harmless, as long as he wasn't in the field that he was in. But, you know, I mean, I will disappoint the audience with this, which is that, you know, I worked in the Senate for 7 years. I knew 100 senators. I was in meetings, you know, with most of them at different points in time. Very casual situations. We would go on retreats, you know, for a few days where we were letting our hair down and, you know, talking out the issues and all that. I've never, ever, ever heard an office holder talk like this, that whenever an office holder was present, even if they were talking about the Yankees game, it was at a more kind of elevated level. It was a little bit like your parents have entered the discussion. And it doesn't mean it was stiff, and it doesn't mean it was boring. It just means there were dimensions to it that you understood and that made sense and that you weren't going to transgress. And this is just, you know...
Clinton, Nixon, Johnson... Schwarzenegger.
No, Clinton, I'll tell you. Here's the funny thing about my experience with Clinton.
But, you know, we should actually take a break.
Okay.
Come back and talk. 866-570-PEN, 7366. We should talk about if that's okay. Should politicians be able to talk about hot blood? How does that make you feel? Hot blood. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette here, and we're back with Lawrence O'Donnell Jr. The phone number is 866-570-PEN, 7366 is the number if you don't have letters on your phone. And the topic is this Schwarzenegger tape and how politicians should talk, and if you'd like them, how you'd like them to talk. And you were saying, but I thought you said contrary things to this at some point, that politicians you had heard in your presence, like D'Amato, didn't you say that he?
Oh, Al D'Amato, Italian-American. Senator from New York, who was basically like my cousin Vinny in the Senate.
Yeah.
It was basically Senator Joe Pesci. Senator D'Amato could sprinkle profanity into his into what he was talking about, but what he'd be talking about is how much he, you know, was angry at Mario Cuomo that week or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I didn't hear senators use profanity. They don't use a lot of it, but it, they're what they're talking about is actual governing. They're not talking about, like Schwarzenegger is here, about how he believes that one of the assembly, one of the members of the assembly, because of her Latino blood, is somehow, you know, a different person, and she's got black blood in her, which is his unique theory that she didn't know anything about prior to him saying that. I mean, that kind of talk, that kind of nonsensical, idiotic stuff and sexual stuff, I never heard them talk about, including Bill Clinton. Now, the reason, you know, Bill Clinton, whenever I was in meetings with Clinton, there was always, say, Senator Moynihan there or a couple of other senators, or and like all presidents, Bill Clinton was the stupidest guy in the room. Mm-hmm. They show up, you know, from out of town. They have no idea what Medicare really is, or Medicaid, or Social Security, or any of these federal programs, because we only hire governors now to be president. Mm-hmm. And so they come in knowing absolutely nothing, and they sit there during meetings with people like me and others who know way more than they do about everything, and they listen, and they say, you know, a couple of words, and they go, oh, really? And that, you know, that's like a presidential comment in a presidential meeting. And you go, yeah, really, it's $18 billion. You go, oh, okay, can we afford that? Yes, we can. Here's how we can. You know, and it goes like that, you know. So I never heard Clinton say anything like that. And I've never heard people who were in close to him, who know him well, who heard him talk about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, he was talking about that kind of stuff at night with Monica Lewinsky.
Let's take a phone call. Let's talk to, hey, Chris, what's up, Chris?
Hey, Penn, it's Chris.
How you doing, man?
I'm from Minnesota. I had Jesse as governor for a while.
Jesse Ventura, yes, you did. A plain-speaking man.
And the media just ripped him apart, but he was the best governor we've ever had, and the last time I voted, and I won't vote again until we get another one like him.
Yeah.
Can I ask a Minnesota politics question?
Maybe.
You've got another very colorful character who's getting close to possibly running for office in Minnesota, Al Franken, comedian, now radio talk show host. How do you think he'll do? And are you as interested in him as you were in Ventura?
I like him, but I don't know if I'll go vote.
Okay.
It's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Yeah, that's true.
So in your life, you voted only for Jesse Ventura. Is that right?
Yep.
Oh, you should be in the voting hall of fame.
Yeah, well, isn't that why Ventura won?
That is,
a
lot to
like
do
Chris?
With it.
All people
Listen,
like Chris?
I did the very first, at MSNBC, I was the very first NBC News employee to have Jesse Ventura on the air. And I had him on the air in a show that I was doing on the weekends. It was prior to that election. I had him on with the guy from the Munsters, who recently died.
Grandpa Munster.
Yeah, who was running for governor in New York.
Yeah, Lewis.
You know, yeah, he was one of, you know, 90 people running for governor in New York. In other words, I put Jesse Ventura on with the joke candidates around the country. Mm-hmm. That was the first interview of Jesse Ventura through NBC News. That was 2 weeks before the election. Jesse Ventura's next interview at NBC News was with Tom Brokaw after he won. So, you know, you went from the lowest paid guy at NBC News to the highest paid guy. So Jesse shocked everybody. We had no idea. And he found an electorate there, like Chris, who no one knew was available.
Well, I believe that is, you're still to that, right, Chris? I haven't hung up
yeah.
with you. But I believe you are the kind of person that is the ideal for me in American politics, that you do not vote for the lesser of two evils. You come out and vote when you think there's a person who deserves the job. Am I stating correctly what you do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fully supportive of that, and I'm the only person in anything like the mainstream media who supports not voting. The way the media comes down on the non-voter as if they're evil people and doing something wrong because they either cannot find the time, which is quite reasonable, on mm-hmm. on a given Tuesday in the winter for, you know, most areas of the country where you could have snow, you know, and you need to pick up your dry cleaning and your kid that day, and you have to have, and you have a job, the odds of you squeezing in the voting exercise into the maybe 20 minutes that's available for it in your day is not very good. If we were at all serious about really wanting Chris and everyone else to vote, we wouldn't limit it to one workday. Mm-hmm. We'd have a three-day vote, you know, that went Friday to Sunday, something like that, which is what they do in places like South Africa, where they get over 90% turnout sometimes. You know, they make it as user-friendly as possible. But also, in South Africa, you stand in line, you know, a mile long to vote for Nelson Mandela. You know, it's like, you know what? I would do that.
Yeah.
I absolutely would do that. You, how long do you want to stand in line to vote for Al Gore or George W. Bush,
yeah,
or these people that this two-party system sends to you?
Yeah. I think that not voting, and that's what Kinky Friedman is counting on. Kinky Friedman, you know, who's got the Jesse Ventura people, he's counting on people who've never voted before.
Let me encourage the non-voter in one more way, which is there's not a single politician I ever knew and continue to know who does not believe that every single one of their votes was an expression of love. Not one of them thinks that this was a lesser of two evils vote. When they get 51.2% of the vote, they believe every one of those people would just surrender their firstborn to them,
yeah,
if they had to. They don't think, well, you know, they hated me less than they hated the other
guy. Boy, is that a good point. Thanks a lot, Chris. Thank you. And keep not voting to give someone good. Let's talk to Mike. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, Penn. How you doing?
Very well, thank you. Is this President Mike?
This is President Mike.
Okay, he calls pretty often. He's running for president.
Oh, yeah.
So now you remembered.
Just so you know, Mike, you now have the best advisor that you'll ever get to talk to until you're actually running for president.
Yeah, no, there are better advisors. But in terms of who's available to you, Mike,
yeah,
I'm it right now.
Oh, I thought you were talking about yourself, Penn.
No. I'm not a good advisor. I think that LOD would tell you in a heartbeat that I'm probably the worst advisor a presidential candidate could have. Isn't that right?
Well, I think the libertarians are where they are today in the polls. thanks to the avid support and strategic guidance of Penn Jillette.
Now, so go ahead. You've got some time there, Mike. Pick his brain. Find out what you need to know.
Well, here's the thing. I actually just wanted to comment on Schwarzenegger's, comment. You know, he used a certain word in an innocuous fashion. Tony Snow used the phrase tar baby about a month and a half ago. He used it in an innocuous way. The phrase hug the tar baby is a normal phrase that says, you know, you don't want to be the one to embrace the problem. But that phrase, tar baby, is a very socially dangerous thing to say. When you're in a position of public seating, you don't want to say anything that could be taken out of context the wrong way by the public.
So, Mike, when you're president,
yes,
I get the feeling you won't, if you say this, you won't tape it. If you won't say, I mean, they are all very hot. They have the, you know, part of the black blood in them and part of the Latino blood in them. That together makes it.
You have to be very careful of how you choose your words all
the time.
Okay,
which of those words wouldn't you say? They are all very hot. That we can agree on.
Yeah,
that's just a compliment.
Yeah.
Latino women, they're all very hot. How do you lose with that as a politician? I'm with that. I'm on board with that.
But
now, the chemistry part, they had the black blood. Where did he get that?
Yeah.
Where did he get that?
Well, it's biochemistry. So it's out of the range of a normal chemist.
It's Austrian chemistry. I think we're getting a feeling for, you know, basic high school chemistry classes in Austria, what they're talking about.
But now, what you're doing is you're giving, Mike, you're giving advice to other political people. What I want is you are the presidential candidate who's been calling the Penn Jillette show the most. You've called up with a few schemes that didn't work, like sending a postcard to every person in the United States of America,
right,
which we did some mathematics for you and turned out wasn't something that was likely for you to be able to do. But you now have a really good political mind. Ask a question there, Mike.
The obvious question is, my problem is that I'm way too truthful, I feel, to ever be elected as a president. You know, the trick to be elected as president is tell the people what they want to hear, and then behind their backs, do something different. You know, tell people that the economy is great and that you're going to lower taxes,
but here's what you don't start doing. You don't start telling the electorate why you won't be elected. This is strategy number one. Okay? Do you have? So let's just pretend you're finished with that whole point. Do you have a second point you would like to make as a candidate for president, other than the one about how you're not going to win and why? Leave out the whys of why you're not going to win.
Do you have a platform?
Well, that's a different question. You asked me if I had a question of how to become president.
Okay, go ahead.
So, do I have a platform?
I mean,
well, I guess my platform.
Say
would be,
anything to us, for the love of Christ, Mike. Anything.
What's your question, Penn? Are you actually asking me anything here? Or,
Mike, here's the deal. When you're, as a candidate, you don't care what the question is. Okay? Mm. When they say to you, but how are you going to balance the budget without raising taxes? Guess what you don't say? How you're going to balance the budget. Okay? You simply start talking. The rule is you ignore the frame of the question. So to get you to today's lesson for moving you out of amateur stage as a candidate into a more professional posture is never, ever ask the questioner for a question. Just, you're going to ignore every question they ask, and you're just going to say what you want to say. And whenever they, in Penn's case, as a fantastic sort of meet the press host here, when he forgets to actually ask you a question, don't invite him to ask you a question.
Well, see, now you're relying on the stupidity and gullibility of the American people not to catch on to my BS.
Yeah, and that's never going to work. I mean, you'd never get a president who relied on the gullibility. I mean, because that could never work. How could that work?
We're going to take a break while I get a lesson on how to ask questions, and while Mike thinks a little bit about how to answer them or not answer them. 866-570-PEN. We're talking to Lawrence O'Donnell Jr. Penn Jillette, 866-570-PEN, that's 7366. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com, sitting here with Lawrence O'Donnell Jr. I guess we're talking politics, aren't we?
We've been talking sex, politics, and accents.
Yes, that's what we've covered. Let's take, I like to take the calls. This isn't the same Mike. This isn't President Mike. Is it? This is a different Mike? Let's talk to this Mike. How you doing, Mike?
All right. I wanted to bring up William Donald Schaefer, former governor of Maryland, lost his first election this past Tuesday, and what people blame it on is a news conference he had where he made the comment to one of the reporters that he was going to stick around afterwards so he could see her stand up and leave and watch her legs.
Yeah, I remember that. He was mayor of Baltimore before governor, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. He was he
very,
was also,
very colorful guy, and he was considered one of the great mayors in his early tenure as mayor of Baltimore. And he's an older guy. He's now, he must be in his 70s, right, or higher.
I believe so, yeah.
And it's one of those things. It's Strom Thurmond, who, lived to be over 100 in the United States Senate. Strom Thurmond used to say stuff like that to female reporters over a 50-year period. And nobody thought anything of it. It's all a matter of the character where you are. If Schaefer was saying a similar kind of thing like that, in, say, Alabama, he'd probably have been okay.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
What was he? I don't even know this. What was the exact thing he said?
Say it again, Mike. What he said?
I don't have the quote.
But it's next to harmless. It really is. Go ahead.
It was a harmless quote, but it was, some people thought it was sexist. The politically correct stuff.
Mm-hmm. It was at the. It was. Say it again. You said it before, Mike. Just tell us. Set it up again. Go ahead.
After he answered her question, he said he was going to stick around after the press conference so he could watch her stand up and leave the room so he could watch her legs.
And he said the word legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's essentially saying that she's got a nice ass. That's the worst.
I think it was more of a hopeful thing. He hadn't actually seen it yet because she was sitting down.
Yeah.
So he kind of wanted to see what was there.
And he's been winning elections forever, right?
This is the first one he lost.
Yeah. It's that is an example of what's supposed to be a private thought. For a politician,
mm-hmm.
You're really kind of not supposed to do.
And can I throw in a couple quotes?
Sure.
Yeah.
First about voting and not voting. What I heard was if the good Lord had intended us to vote, he would have given us candidates.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
Beautiful.
And when you're voting for the lesser of two evils, you're still voting for evil.
That's correct.
Mm. Yeah. No doubt about it. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Now, let me just say, as a champion of not voting, I have voted in every election I've been eligible to vote for since the age of 18. I never not vote. I am fetishistic about it, but I am a staunch defender of the right to not vote and the honor in not voting in certain cases. And by the way, I'm also a defender of the laziness of not voting.
Yeah.
I'm all for
it. I also vote, but I do the same thing as not voting, which is I vote libertarian.
I vote third, fifth, and ninth parties all the time. I have never voted for the winner of the presidency in the United States.
Nor have I.
And let me just add another clue to the audience. I have also never in my life for any office ever voted for a Republican.
Uh-huh.
So.
Or a Democrat.
I have voted for Democrats.
Okay. Well, let's take another call. Let's talk to Brian. How you doing, Brian?
Hey, Penn, how are you? Great show.
Well, thanks so much, man. What's up?
Not much. I just wanted to ask you if you thought that it was right to hold politicians to this such a high level. I mean, I think that the world is getting so sensitive to issues. I mean, barring any, you know, true vulgarity or true embarrassment to a person, what's the big deal? I don't understand.
I want to hold them to a different, higher standard. I don't want to hold them to a... I'm okay holding them to a completely politically correct standard, providing we also hold them to a standard of truthfulness and a standard of level-headedness. I mean, I think that I'm okay with saying you can't make a comment about a reporter's ass. I'm fine with that being the rule. But I also want other stuff involved, too.
Well, here's why these comments by people like Schwarzenegger become so important politically. It's because people do not understand the rest of what California government is about. Government has become incredibly complex. It is extremely difficult to keep pace with it in terms of just understanding it and what they're doing. So to evaluate a governor becomes an extremely complex exercise. By the way, far more complex than deciding, is the president of Avis any good? And oh, by the way, none of us really have good tools for figuring out if the president of Avis is doing a good job. You know, it's a much more limited job, but we don't even know how to figure that out. So we're left with things like, oh, he said this weird thing about this woman having black blood and that explaining something about her. I think that's dumb, is what I think most people who will have a negative reaction to.
So what they're radio, is your radio up? Can you turn your radio down?
I hear something strange.
My radio's down, Penn.
Okay, I
do agree with you 100% as far as, you know, making a statement when you're a politician. It obviously gets more airplay. But I think sometimes things are taken out of context. Now, I mean, I know that was a stupid comment on his part.
I think my way of looking at it, what the American people are thinking, perhaps, is that if you can't be careful enough to know what you could say that could be taken out of context, then maybe you're making other mistakes as well.
Yeah, it's a bit of an intelligence test.
Yeah.
And then let's just remember that the voter makes up their own mind. You know, a lot of California voters are going to read these comments and they're going to go, nah, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not up to the press to decide how important these things are.
And some are going to say, cool.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
yes.
They voted for the Terminator, okay? I mean, the Governator. They voted for this man. And, I mean, you know, they get what they get. They get a very pretty much down-earth kind of person who is used to speaking his mind. Now he's a governor, so now maybe he should be a little more conservative with his view, with his conversation.
No. I want him to speak his mind. These guys to speak their mind. That's how you find out what's in there.
I'm going to hang up on you because the phone is so bad. We're still going to talk about what you're doing. I think it's driving us crazy. But that I did hang up on him in the middle of a sentence, but only because his phone was better. But go ahead, you can finish your point.
Yeah, I very much want them to speak their minds. I wish, for example, that they had no speech writers at all. I wish they had to get up and either write their own speeches or extemporaneously.
But you just said that the president is always the stupidest person in the room.
Yeah.
You want to judge a president.
I don't like being the only person who knows that.
Yeah. You want to judge a president on the people he puts around him and the way he assimilates that information and the speechwriters he hires. I mean, isn't that a good indication how good the speechwriters are? I mean, isn't this all a microcosm? I mean, if you can find somebody who can't know not to make a racist or not even racist or sexist, something could be interpreted as racist or sexist comment. If they can't keep that going 24/7, and if they can't pick a speechwriter that's 1,000 times better than they are, do you want to trust that person to pick people in the cabinet that we don't know anything about?
I've never known anyone in elective office who was actually good at governing who was not also good at being able to articulate the reasons that he was using for governing the way he was governing. And so I believe that if they're good at it, they can actually explain it to you themselves
but
without having somebody write for them.
But you consider Moynihan to have been
yes,
great.
And he never had a speechwriter. Never once.
Well, that changes that argument
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, so that's my prejudice,
yeah.
is that, you know, Daniel Patrick Moynihan wrote his own speeches, and by the way, he would only write speeches if he was going up to give, you know, the commencement address at Harvard or something like that. He would go out onto the Senate floor with nothing written. It would all be in his head. And he would do 20 minutes, he would do 2 minutes, he would do an hour and a half, and it would have a scope of history, and it would have an understanding of the issues involved in the legislation that were in front of us that were amazing. And senators used to come to the floor to sit there and listen to him, which is kind of the way it was with senators like Daniel Webster. Now, no one comes to the Senate floor to listen to any senators now because there's not a single senator there who thinks any one of the other guys knows something that they don't know. And, oh, by the way, that's true.
So what is the solution? You've got about a minute. How do we solve it so politicians are really speaking their minds and we can tell how good they are and we can understand it all?
We make speech writing illegal. It would be so funny. I'm telling you, it would be so funny. If these guys are left out there with, I mean, just for a year, we'd just be rolling over laughing all the time. They're just left to their own devices and how to answer things and how to say things. It would be fantastic.
And how would you enforce it?
And by the way, Schwarzenegger would look, you know, like just slightly below average as opposed to rank stupid, which is compared to other politicians, which is the way he looks now, because Schwarzenegger is, in effect, unprotected man, which is what Ross Perot was when he ran for president. He said some things that were weird, but that's because he was an unprotected man. He didn't have enough handlers. He didn't have press secretaries. He didn't have speechwriters to say to him.
But doesn't Schwarzenegger have all that?
He has all that. He's just stupid.
So he doesn't.
He's an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've watched this too long. He's just an idiot.
Now, what is his career in politics going to be from here on?
Well, he's ahead of his challenger, but he doesn't have, he's not polling over 50%. And when you are an incumbent, when you have the office that you're running for re-election in, you have to poll over 50% in order to win it. It's very unusual. If you're like right now, he's polling around 45, and his challenger is down in the 30s. Mm-hmm. But the problem is he's at 45. You know, it's very hard for him to make up, with voters who already know him, that extra 5%, whereas the challenger actually has an easier time convincing another 12% of the people to vote for him. So there's time. We'll see what will happen.
And when all's said and done, this little incident about the hot-blooded, does it help Schwarzenegger or the other guy?
Oh, man, it's so hard to tell right now. It's playing a little bit against the other guy, I think.
Okay, cool. This is Penn Jillette with Lawrence O'Donnell, who'll also be here tomorrow. And then Monday, the triumphant return of Michael Goodell. This is Penn Jillette on Free FM. And remember, if you don't like anybody, don't vote.